sir. This is CBS Eye on the World, and wishing a happy birthday to King Charles III. He is 75 years old, as I am, and we have the same memories, happy memories. And I wish the king well because his country, the United Kingdom, and his Commonwealth are challenged right now by two wars in Eurasia, a third war threatened in East Asia. At the same time, because of both wars, because of all controversies following the pandemic, the disorder in the streets is evident, most recently at a huge march, gigantic march in London, following a not much smaller march in London the previous week, protesting some aspect of the Gazan war, and also with suggestions more than that in some instances of signs and things called out and behavior of anti-Semitism. All these issues come together for Joseph Sternberg, a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's in London. He writes political economics, and his most recent column confronted the anti-Semitism that is reported across Europe and what is to be done. Joe, a very good evening to you. I want to begin with the march because it dominated the news over the weekend that I consumed here in New England. The march was said to be hundreds of thousands. I saw the number 300,000. I don't know. There were said to be some extreme statements, what you would expect in 300,000 people. And there was said to be generally a handling of the situation by the Metropolitan Police, the famous Bobbies. Although there was much talk in the cabinet between the then Home Secretary, Suella Braverman, who believed that it was a hate march, she declared it a hate march, and the Sunak government, now that there's a new Home Secretary, Mr. Cleverly, who was the foreign minister. What is the nature of the dispute in the cabinet, to your understanding, Joe? Suella Braverman spoke out in a fashion that was not irregular. There certainly were hate elements in the march. Why was she sacked? Is this part of the story, or is this having to do with Tory inside baseball? Thank you, Joe.
Hi, John. Well, I think that these political events in the UK are an example of how the war that Hamas started on October 7th with its terrorist invasion of Israel is all of a sudden spiraling into a political uproar across Europe. And so the form that that is taking in the United Kingdom is that the public has really been shocked to see that what have become weekly pro-Palestinian marches that, elements of the protests every Saturday bleed in to support for Hamas, sometimes overt support, and then also the chanting of anti-Semitic slogans or the carrying of anti-Semitic signs and placards in these marches. And that, you know, the fact that this is happening has been very concerning, I think, to a lot of the British public, because first off, it is highlighting the fact that you have a large community living within British society that doesn't seem to share values of the broader society in terms of understanding the horrific evil that was perpetrated by Hamas on October 7th. And then also, it's becoming this issue about, you know, what the authorities should do about it. And matters came to a head before this weekend just passed because it was a particularly sensitive weekend in British culture. November 11th is Armistice Day, and then the Sunday around the 11th is always Remembrance Sunday. These are very potent civic holidays or commemorations in the United Kingdom. We don't even really have an equivalent in the United States. I think Veterans Day or Memorial Day don't really compare to the gravity of these occasions in the United Kingdom. And so there was a perception that for the pro-Palestinian groups to organize another protest march on that day was particularly provocative. And so this set off a huge political fight within Conservative Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's government about what the political administration and what the police could or should do about this protest and whether they should allow it to go on. And that is really at the core of the events that then in the past day have led to the Home Secretary Suella Braverman, who had wanted to shut down the protests. She has been fired by Prime Minister Sunak, and that is now causing a lot of ripple on consternation among members of the Conservative Party who thought that she was actually right about these marches.
Yes, I saw, because I read the London Times, and I read the Telegraph, and I read the Guardian. I try to read the Guardian all the way through, and because that is generally understood to be the left of center in British reporting, and the Daily Mail, of course, because it has lots of pictures. I follow as best I can, and there didn't seem to be any pushback on the idea that these marches represented aggression, anti-Semitic aggression in much instances, and were not helping the matter. So can you help me understand why Mr. Sunak believed that it was necessary to remove Suella Braverman? Is she a future leader of the Tory party? Is she making a move politically that will redound to her favor in the future? Was that part of the story?
Well, I think it is true that these protests, although really the content of them is often very deeply offensive, and you know, in some instances may cross a line into what under British law would be considered hate speech, which can be prosecuted. You do have this issue where in a free society, you have to tolerate protests even that you find deeply offensive or that might offend the broader society's values. So I think that there has been this argument about where you draw that line in this instance and how the police should be approaching allegations of hate speech that might be prosecutable. And it appears that the police are investigating some allegations of that kind of behavior while still allowing room for people to express their views on political topics in a free society. And the Suella Braverman's political sin, supposedly, is that she amped up the temperature a little too high by calling it a hate march, was the phrase that she used, and comparing it to the sort of provocative sectarian marches that you used to see in Northern Ireland during the Troubles there. And some people suggested, even including within the Conservative Party leadership, that that had gone too far and was unhelpful. But I think it is turning out to be the case that she was really reflecting the views of a big part of the public, and that might in turn end up being relevant for her political career in the future, because I think that a lot of Tory supporters will remember that they agreed with her on these issues.
Let's go to the continent, because in your column you mentioned Robert Habeck in Germany and then the challenge of the French government, because they have a very large number of Muslims, I understand, living in the general Parisian area. No one has a good answer, so I'm not looking for who does it right. How do you measure the continent dealing, Germany and France in particular, with the anti-Semitic nature of some of these marches? There is talk, if I understand correctly, of deporting people who are convicted of anti-Semitic conduct. Is that something they're talking about in Britain as well?
Yes, you have had some of that discussion starting in the UK. But again, this is a really interesting example of how the horrific events of October 7th have unleashed all of these political torrents in Europe. And I think that a big one of those concerns, immigration policy, because there's been a lot of unease on the part of the European public for some years now with the large number of migrants, many of them arriving illegally, who may or may not share European values. I think that rightly or wrongly, this phenomenon has come to be associated with various forms of terrorist incident in Europe. And the political class has failed to offer the public a way by which migrants from all kinds of cultural backgrounds could be assimilated into European values so that the public would not have to worry about that. And so now we find ourselves in the situation where you're having discussions, even in liberal or left-wing media outlets in places like Germany, saying, hang on a sec, these people who are protesting, who seem to be sympathetic with Hamas and voicing anti-Semitic attitudes, are coming from among the ranks of all of these migrants from the Middle East that we have allowed in. And Europe, all of a sudden, is concluding that the easy solution might be to deport them. And it's not a solution at all, because oftentimes the clash of values happens not among the first people who have arrived, who you could easily deport, but among their children or grandchildren, where it's much harder to know what you can do if you're solving this as a matter of immigration law. I think that the bigger problem that Europe is barely beginning to grapple with is, how can Europe become a continent that is able to communicate its values, or impart those, you know, cultural values or norms to immigrant communities? And I mean, in America, this has been very painful and difficult for us. Even though we have 250 years of practice, Europe is still at the very beginning stages of dealing with that.
The matter of speech, we have the First Amendment, Europe has unwritten constitutions or something like freedom of speech. I don't know whether that's part of the story here, Joe. I can't tell at this distance. Is it debated in London whether a person has a right to say hateful things? Is that a public debate?
Well, it's interesting, because a lot of European countries have much stricter regulations on speech than we would be accustomed to or comfortable with in the U.S. So in the U.K., for example, there is already there are laws on the books against hate speech that are probably more restrictive than we would recognize in the U.S. So the debate here is about the enforcement of those laws. And this was, again, a complaint that Suella Braverman raised as Home Secretary, the suspicion that the police are not enforcing those laws as aggressively against some of the participants in these pro-Palestinian marches as the police enforce these laws against other people. Because I think that you have seen a lot of evidence of speech that would cross the line that the British law sets, where it isn't clear that the police have been taking a hard stand on enforcement while the protests are going on, or what the police are doing after the fact to try to prosecute people who might have broken the law. And I think the problem is, if you have a law on the books, you have to be seen to enforce it.
The German story is profoundly different because of events of the 1930s and 1940s. And also, last week was the week of Kristallnacht, the 85th anniversary of Kristallnacht. And the chancellor spoke movingly about Kristallnacht and what it meant to Germany's special burden. But you observe that Germany also has the migration story unsolved. I know it has a very large Turkish population that's been there for several generations. It also absorbed a great number of dislocated Syrians and other Middle Easterners after 2015, is my memory. Is that story any happier than it is in London right now? Because there are a lot of dark voices in central London. Are there similar dark voices in central Berlin?
Well, this has been a real shock to Germany's system, because, I mean, talking about Kristallnacht or the Holocaust of the 1930s and 40s, that is a key part of Germany's political culture and its moral culture as a society now. This remembrance culture that has developed within Germany, the way they understand the history of the Holocaust and Germany's role in it, the history of Nazism, and the obligations that Germans believe that places on them to act in a certain way in the world now, including support for Israel. And it has been a shock to them to discover that large communities within Germany of immigrants have not been assimilated into that key part of German culture, apparently do not share those values or understand those norms. And so this is triggering a lot of soul searching and hurry in Germany about why and how it is that they have failed to impart such an important element of Germany's political or civic culture to new arrivals, and what could or should be done about that to remedy that failure now.
And France has an equally huge problem because that the French speakers from North Africa are dominated by Islam over these many generations. So we're dealing with people who participate in these marches, these unacceptable marches, who are French for generations, correct, Joe? There's nothing foreign about them. They're Frenchmen.
Well, yes, and that's exactly why this discussion that's beginning in a lot of parts of Europe about deporting people as a solution isn't really going to help address this values gap or this norms gap at all, because a lot of the people where you have these problems of assimilating into the cultural norms in a place like France are not the new immigrants. They are the children or grandchildren of the people who were the immigrants. And I think that this is exposing the extent to which a lot of European societies are several generations behind dealing with these issues of assimilation. And it has really come to the fore in the past couple of weeks, especially in these protest movements.
Joseph Sternberg, editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics. He's in London. Returning to Life in London, I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.